理课堂听 class.com
Workbook Unit 18 Integrating Skills Reading Inventions Computers that use light instead of electricity Smart clothes that can make phone calls and play music House paints that change color with the seasons E-paper and ads that speak to youThe list of amazing new inventions that seem to be just around the corner is long and inspiring. How many of these new technologies will actually become reality remains to be seen, but it is clear that the next 50 years will be exciting. Here is a look at some of the new ideas that may shape our future. Now you see it, now you don't. Researchers in Japan have invented a kind of paint that makes things invisible. It may sound incredible,But the new paint reflects light in such a way that the human eye is fooled. The technology behind the paint is fairly simple. Instead of letting the light rays bounce back in the normal way, the paint sends the light back to the source. It is as if a basketball backboard was made so that a ball thrown at an angle would bounce right back at the person throwing it. The paint does not really make things disappear, but by changing the way the light bounces, it does make it possible to see through objects.The technology has many potential uses. The paint could be used to make interesting clothes and to help doctors see through the skin of a patient and thus be able to work better. It may also be used to hide things that we do not want others to see. Don't touch that knife. Most of us probably hope that we will never have to face major surgery. Even though doctors are well trained and modern technology makes it possible to save lives, many operations are still dangerous and painful. Now, however,Scientists believe that they might be able to help doctors to cure patients with less risk. A new and very small robot has been invented. This robot can enter the human body through a small hole so that it is no longer necessary to cut the patient. Instead of using knives and other large tools, doctors can use a computer to move the tiny robot around. If the technology can be used on human beings, operations will be safer and less painful. That will never work.Or will it? The most exciting inventions are always the ones that have not yet been made. The true challenge for any inventor is to dare to dream and believe that what seems impossible today may one day become possible. Among the many inventions that are being discussed by some scientists are several that may seem ridiculous to us. For example, one scientist is trying to build a device that will allow information to enter the human body. In early experiments,The scientist was able to send sound into humans and dolphins, with some success. He is now working on sending visual information to the brain, so that blind people could be able to see. The scientists believe that it may be possible to learn by sending information to the brain. Other inventors are trying to make something out of nothing. One group of scientists think that it may be possible to make energy from space itself. According to their theories, what we think of as empty space...does in fact contain energy in the form of movement. They describe space as true perpetual motion, that is, movement that never stops. They claim that there are energy fields everywhere. Because of the laws of physics, there are always small movements everywhere. For hundreds of years, people have tried to build machines that never stop, but the laws of physics show that it cannot be done. The space motion, however,could turn out to be endless. The scientists working on the program believe that these fields of energy can be put to work. If they are successful, a new and cheap energy source will become available to us. It should be said that most scientists think that these inventions will never work. Perhaps they are right. But we would do well to keep in mind that many inventions that we now take for granted were greeted with doubt. People laughed at Benjamin Franklin's early discoveries, and many other great scientists had to wait many years before their ideas were accepted. It is also important to remember that new inventions do not always work well in the beginning. A good example is the first airplane, which only flew a very short distance. Unit 19. The Merchant of Venice. Reading. The Merchant of Venice. 1. Shylock, the world thinks, and I think so too, that you are playing a cruel game, but we all believe that you will give it up in the end. Have mercy on Antonio, Shylock. Be reasonable.
I've promised to take my pound of flesh. If you won't let me have it, That will be a sign of weakness, and no one will trust your laws anymore. The greatness of Venice will soon be lost. Antonio is my enemy, and I hate him.
Do all men kill the things they do not love? It's useless trying to argue with Shylock. You might as well go stand upon the beach and argue with the sea. Don't wait any longer. Pass judgment on me, and give Shylock what he wants.
I'll pay you 6,000 ducats for the 3,000 ducats that Antonio borrowed.
If you offered me 6 times what you have just offered, I would still take my pound of flesh. Give me my pound of flesh.
Let us be calm, gentlemen. Shylock, how can you hope for mercy yourself when you show none?
I have done nothing wrong, and I fear no judgment. I desire my pound of flesh.
Enter Portia, dressed as the judge.
Greetings, learned judge. I do not envy you your job. This is a most troublesome case.
Greetings. Please be seated. Are you Antonio? And is this your agreement with Shylock? What are you accused of?
Shylock does not accuse me of anything. My fate is a consequence of bad fortune.
Then Shylock must be merciful. He must have mercy on Antonio.
Why must I have mercy on him? Tell me that. I've kept my side of the bargain, and I expect him to keep his.
Mercy brings good. Mercy falls like the gentle rain from the sky upon the earth. It is twice blessed. It blesses those who give it and those who receive it. It's the highest of the highest. We should learn to show mercy to others. Do you still ask for this pound of flesh?
I ask for my legal right.
I offer 10 times the money that Antonio has borrowed. Please change the law a little. To do a great right, do a little wrong, and in that way we can save Antonio.
That's impossible, sir. We cannot change a law. If one law is changed, then people will later want to change other laws.
Oh, wise young judge.
Let me see this agreement, this promise of Antonio to you.
Here it is.
I see. According to the law, Shylock may have a pound of flesh to be cut off nearest to Antonio's heart. Be merciful. Take more than 3 times your money, and let me tear up this paper.
I have sworn to heaven to have my pound of flesh. I must have it.
It must be so. Antonio, get ready and offer up your breast. And Shylock, take your knife and prepare to do the deed. Have you brought something to weigh the flesh? A balance?
Yes, I have everything ready here.
Did you bring a surgeon, Shylock, to take care of Antonio's wounds and make sure that he doesn't bleed to death?
That's not a requirement. There's nothing about that in the agreement.
Do you wish to say anything, Antonio?
Only a little. I am ready for it. Farewell, Bassanio. Don't be sad for me. Tell your wife about me and let her be the judge of my character. If Shylock cuts deep enough, I'll pay him back with all my heart.
Let me take you in my arms and say goodbye. I love you more than my own life, more than my wife, and more than all the world.
Your wife would not be pleased to hear you say that.
We are wasting time. Learn, judge, pass your judgment.
Take your pound of flesh. I declare the court allows it and the law gives it to you.
Integrating skills. Reading. The Merchant of Venice. 2.
Shylock advances toward Antonio and prepares to use his knife.
Wait, there is something else. Antonio has promised to give you a pound of his flesh, but he has not promised to give you any of his blood. If you let one drop of his blood fall, you will lose all your land and all your money.
Is that the law?
That is the law. You wanted justice, so you shall get justice, more than you wanted.
I will take the money. Give me 3 times more than Antonio borrowed from me.
Here it is!
Wait! Shylock would not take the money earlier. All he wanted was justice. That is all he can have now. You must cut off 1 pound of flesh, no more, no less, and not one drop of blood must fall.
Shylock turns and starts to leave the court.
Wait, Shylock. The law of Venice says that if anyone tries to kill or murder any citizen of Venice, everything that he owns shall be taken away from him. One half of his money and his goods shall be given to the city of Venice, and the other half shall be given to the person he has tried to kill. His life shall be at the mercy of the Duke. Therefore, go down on your knees and beg the Duke for mercy.
Good sir, I beg for mercy. Please forgive me for all I've said and done.
Although you've not shown yourself worthy of our kindness, you will see the difference of our spirit. I shall not have you killed, but as your punishment, half of your money is now Antonio's. You must give the other half to the city of Venice.
Take my life, too. My money and goods are as dear to me as life itself. They are my only comfort. When you take those away from me, you also take my life.
I shall be happy to give up my part of Shylock's money. Shylock must promise to leave the money upon his death to his daughter and her husband.
I promise. Let me go home now. I am not well.
Workbook, Unit 19. Talking. 1. Read the following situation and act out the dialogue. Before Bassanio and Portia got married, Portia gave him a ring and made him promise to keep it all his life. Losing it, selling it, or giving it away would be the end of her love for him. After the court case between Antonio and Shylock, Bassanio gives the lawyer this ring.
Sir, to thank you for your help, please take the 3,000 ducats that Shylock must pay to Antonio.
Oh no, I can't take that money. Shylock has learnt his lesson, and I am glad that I could help you and save Antonio. Goodbye.
But sir, can't we give you something small by which you can remember us?
Well, okay then, since you insist. Antonio, I will take your gloves. And Bassanio, I will take this ring of yours. Don't draw back your hand.
But sir, I can't give you this ring. It isn't of much value.
That doesn't matter. I like it, and it is the only thing I want from you.
I'm sorry. I can't do that. I will give you the most expensive ring in Venice, but not this one. It has a special value for me.
I can see you make promises as easy as you break them.
Good sir, this ring was given to me by my wife, and she made me promise that I should neither sell nor give nor lose it.
That's a bad excuse. I've heard it many times. If your wife knew how well I deserve it, she would no longer be angry with you for giving it to me. Farewell.
Bassanio, give him the ring. He deserves it. And for the sake of my love, forget what promise you made to your wife.
All right. I will do it for you. Please give it to him.
Integrating skills. Reading. Shakespeare's heroines. One of the most famous young women from Shakespeare's plays is Juliet. In Romeo and Juliet, a fight between their two families makes it impossible for Romeo and Juliet to get married. However, they marry each other in secret. The only way to be together is to move to another city. To do so, Juliet has a plan. First, she takes a drug that makes her appear to be dead. When she wakes, a friend will help her escape from the tomb. Unfortunately, not only her family believe that she is dead, Romeo thinks so too. He is so sad that he kills himself. When Juliet wakes up and finds Romeo dead, she kills herself too. At the beginning of the play, Juliet is just a little girl. Meeting with the handsome, intelligent, and charming Romeo, she immediately falls in love with him. Neither Romeo nor Juliet is interested in any of the violence between their families. To them, love is the most important thing. Loving Romeo, Juliet grows up showing amazing courage. From being a girl guided by duty, she becomes a loyal young woman of strength and self-determination. Portia, in The Merchant of Venice, is a woman quite different from Juliet. While Juliet can be seen as a character of passion and imagination, Portia stands out for her intelligence. It is her sharp mind and debating skills that make Portia the heroine of the play. Portia is intelligent, rich, and beautiful. Handling the court case gives her the opportunity to show that she can be creative. Not only does she know the rules of the law very well, she can also apply them in new ways and play with the meaning of words. Anybody can break the rules, but few people have Portia's skills to make the law work for her. Although there are many more women in Shakespeare's plays who deserve to be admired, there is one who should never be forgotten. She is not known for her passion, nor for her intelligence. Instead, she is known for the goodness of her heart, her feelings of love and caring. In King Lear, Cordelia is Lear's youngest and favorite daughter. Lear, the old king of Britain, decides to divide his country among his three daughters. First, however, he puts them through a test, asking each to tell him how much she loves him. The two oldest daughters are dishonest. They use beautiful words to win their father's trust, but Cordelia remains silent, saying that she has no words to describe how much she loves her father. This makes Lear very angry with her. Only towards the end of the play does King Lear learn who is his truest daughter. Being honest with her father has made her lose his love, her part of the country, and a lot of money. But Cordelia does not care for all that. She remains loyal to her father, despite his cruelty towards her, and can even forgive him. Her main characteristics are devotion, kindness, and honesty. Although Cordelia's role in the plays is rather small, she shines as the heroine of goodness and wisdom, and has earned a place in the hearts of all readers of King Lear. Unit 20. Archaeology. Speaking. 1. Work with your partner and practice the following dialogue. Student A talks about a topic he or she is interested in, while student B gives suggestions.
I'd like to know more about life as it was 200 years ago.
Well, you can read some books about that. Why?
I wonder what life was like in small towns in our province.
You could visit a local museum and study what archaeologists found.
No, I'm not interested in broken pots and vases. I'd love to know what people talked about and how they really lived.
That may be difficult to find out.
What I'd really like to find out is whether people would sometimes want to go on a holiday as we do. That sort of thing.
Reading. The King of Stonehenge. On May 3, 2002, archaeologists in England found a grave of a man dating back to around 2300 BC. When he died, the man was about 40 years old. He was buried on his left side with his face to the north. The tests on his teeth show that he spent his youth in Central Europe, perhaps Germany. Buried with him were the tools of a hunter or warrior. Some of the objects found in the grave give us an idea of how he was dressed when he was buried. There was a bone pin that may have been from a piece of clothing such as a leather coat. He carried a copper knife on his breast. The most amazing find was two gold earrings. That would have made him a man of distinction. Only a few centimeters from his head were two pots made of clay, tools and materials to make arrows, a bow and a dozen arrows for hunting, and a second, smaller copper knife. Next to them lay a cushioned stone, upon which the man could work metal. Everything found in the man's grave was probably given to him for his use in the next life. It was all that a person would need to survive: clothing, tools, weapons, pottery, and spare materials to make new tools. The discovery is important for a variety of reasons. His grave is the richest of any found from that period. This was a time when the first metals were brought to Britain, and this man was buried with two gold earrings, which are the oldest gold ever found in Britain, dated to 2470 BC. He was important for another reason. He was buried 3 miles from Stonehenge, at the time when the great stones were being brought to Salisbury to build it. Archaeologists tend to believe that this man was a member of a powerful class that may well have organized the construction of Stonehenge. For these reasons, this man has been called the King of Stonehenge. Stonehenge was begun around 3000 BC. In about 2300 BC, the huge stone circles were built. The biggest stones weigh approximately 20 tons and came from a place not very far. But the smaller blue stones, still weighing 4 tons on average, came from West Wales. It is not yet known how these were conveyed over a distance of 380 kilometers. It is also a mystery how early man was able to construct Stonehenge without the use of modern construction machines and lorries. It is possible that the King of Stonehenge was linked to the stones. He may have had a hand in planning the monument or in helping transport and pull up the stones. Perhaps the most important fact about the King of Stonehenge is that his homeland was somewhere in Central Europe. He is an example of people who brought culture and new techniques from the European mainland to Britain. In terms of technical development, people were going from the Stone Age to the Bronze Age. In the Stone Age, most tools were made of stone. In the Bronze Age, people could make tools of copper and bronze, but not iron. Iron came later. In what was called the Iron Age, at first it was thought that the skills to make copper and bronze objects spread to Britain was through war and armed conflict, but it is now believed to have happened through trade and cultural links. The King of Stonehenge came with the skills to make metal, and that would have given him a high status in the eyes of local people. Some of the artifacts in his grave came from remote places. It has been proved that the copper knives came from places as distant as Spain and western France. The gold jewelry came from Europe, too. Integrating skills. Reading. Roots of Chinese culture.
Jinsha village near Chengdu in southwest Sichuan province became famous all over China in 2001. Construction workers from a local company were building roads there. On February 8th, they found ivory and jade in the mud. Soon, the police arrived and closed the site. Since then, archaeologists have found more than 1,000 artifacts, including gold, jade, bronze, and stone objects, as well as a large quantity of ivory that must have come from at least 500 elephants. The ivory and animal bones that were found will serve as important materials for the study of local geography, climate, and the environment in ancient times. Many of the relics look very much like those found in Sanxingdui. For example, a gold mask and a bronze statue of a man remind visitors of the bronze masks and big bronze statues at Sanxingdui because of their similar style. Among the many jade objects found at Jinsha, one piece, called a zong by ancient Chinese, was not made in Sichuan. It was transported there from the lower area of the Yangtze River. Other relics discovered at Jinsha made archaeologists believe that Sichuan not only had trade links with the Yangtze and Yellow River valleys, Yunnan and Guizhou provinces, but also with northern Vietnam. Before the discoveries, it was believed that Sichuan only had a history of about 2,300 years. Now, archaeologists think that the Jinsha ruins may have been the political and cultural center of the ancient Shu Kingdom, which moved from Sanxingdui to Chengdu about 3,000 years ago. Sanxingdui was first discovered by farmers. In the spring of 1929, a farmer in today's Nanxing town was working in the fields when his son dug up a round piece of jade. They found a hole filled with more than 400 jade objects. Local teachers and officials came to his home, but none of them could say in which dynasty the jade objects were made. In 1953, Yan Kaizong accompanied his grandfather when he gave the relics from the ruins to the state. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when he and his grandpa reached the museum in Guanghan, where an official warmly received them. "My grandpa told us not to keep things that don't belong to us. I believe what he said," said Yang Kaizong. Since 1929, more than 10,000 relics dating back to between 5,000 BC and 3,000 BC have been discovered. The Sanxingdui ruins site covers a vast area of about 12 square kilometers. From March to August 1986, archaeologists of the History Department of Sichuan University, Sichuan Archaeological Research Institute, and the city of Guanghan dug 53 holes. When the work was finished, over 1,200 pieces, including bronze and gold masks, bronze objects and images, jade and ivory had been found. Archaeologists will continue their work, digging at the Sanxingdui ruins from 2003 until 2010. They hope to discover some of the mysterious palaces, tombs of kings, and bronze and jade workshops.
Workbook, Unit 20. Integrating skills. Reading. threats to our national treasures.
People have always had interest in the past. Professor Xu, what are the most important dangers to our archaeological treasures?
They get damaged or lost. It's a matter of education. People fail to take the right steps when something is found. Fortunately, the government has helped spreading the basic knowledge among the population, telling what is to be done when an archaeological find is made.
What does that knowledge consist of?
Well, when something is found, construction work must be stopped and the police should be told about the find. That is to make sure that no further damage will be done.
Does it still happen that people do not report things they find?
Yes, indeed. They doubt whether it is necessary to do so. It sometimes happens that a find is not very valuable. They are afraid that they would make scientists come for nothing.
Are there other reasons why people don't report their finds?
Oh, yes. People are afraid that archaeologists might take a real interest in the site and spend many weeks or months digging around at it. That would result in farmers missing the right opportunity to plant crops or construction work to be stopped for a long time. They don't realize that they should not weigh their own business interest against our national history.
If it is so important to dig things up and collect them, then why are archaeologists worried that other people dig up artifacts and give them to museums, or add them to their own private archaeological collections?
Archaeology is a professional discipline. Years of training and experience are needed. It is not just about finding things and digging them up. The fieldwork must be done very carefully. Of every find, there needs to be a written record, to which a photograph must be added. The records must also state exactly what was found, where it was found, and when. The outdoor work is followed by work in the lab, cleaning, restoring and identifying each artifact. Finally, when all is done, an analysis must be written and published in a magazine or a book.
Are there any other dangers? Natural disasters, perhaps?
Unfortunately, there are treasure hunters, people who search for valuable objects, especially jewelry and gold. They are the worst. History does not need to fear nature very much. What has been buried has often been buried well. It is often human digging that causes the loss of valuable materials. It may seem a contradiction, but leaving things as they are would often be the best way of keeping things for the generations to come.